Gordon, thanks for the opportunity to have a chat.
Thank you.
Why is this an important time in your life to be doing this?
Is it? Music always been important to me. Obviously, with as you go through life, there are other things that, you know, like family and jobs, etc., which become more pressing, etc. But music's always played a huge role in my life. I've always had guitars. Since I was young, I've written songs, I've played in bands. And for the first, 15, 20 years of my adult life, that's really what I did.
What about when you were very young, though? What do you remember hearing? What were the songs that...
The Beatles and the Hollies.
Right.
The Beatles and the Hollies. I remember listening... We lived in a very remote part of the northeast of England, and a very remote house. And I remember sitting below the kitchen window with a transistor radio on the kitchen window and the window open and listening to the Hollies underneath the windowsill. I remember that.
Now, one of the things that I've discovered about you and about your songwriting is that a great deal of it is very personal.
Yeah, it always has been, yeah.
And I wonder if, you know, because of your own background, whether it was easy perhaps for you to write things down rather than be able to just express it in speech to people.
Well, there is that. And the very first album that I released, it's called It Never Made the News. And the title track on that song was about my dad dying and then my mum dying. And basically saying it never made the news. It was big to me, but it wasn't big to anybody else.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember when I recorded that at the time, and the producer eventually, when he sat down and listened to what I was singing one time from the vocal booth, went, "Whoa, I've just listened to these words. You know, my God. You know." But it took quite a long time for me to. Not to write that song. It took a long time for me to get that song right. And it wasn't the first one that I went in and did for that album. It was four or five down the line, even though I knew it was the most powerful song. So, yeah, there maybe is a little bit that it's easier for me to write about situations than maybe talk about situations, because I'm one of these people that you just get on with it.
Yeah, well... You know, coming from a working class miner's background, do you think that was really just part of everyday life there? Yeah. You didn't really express your feelings.
Yeah.
You didn't bring things out. Yeah. So it might be better expressed in poetry or in songwriting.
Yeah, I do. Digging deep already, Jay. but yeah, I think of the things that my mum and dad went through. They both died when they were, in the 50s. I remember the things that they went through, and nowadays there would have been so many other agencies, etc., involved in helping them and things like that. But there was nothing. You just sucked it up and got on with it, because that was the backbone of what the working class did.
Now, your life, could be summed up perhaps in the same way as the title of this album, Roulette, because you spin the wheel, you take the chance, and you know the ball lands where it has to be played, and your life has been very varied, and we're going to get into that in a little while. But tell us first about this song, the title track of the album,
Roulette. It's really about, it can be viewed as a love song, but it's really about someone putting the marker down now for a time in the future when things might not be as they are just now. And it's really written about someone having dementia. So it's when I'm staring at the space, well, I'm not really staring at the space, I'm looking at your face and I'm remembering the place where we met. You might think I'm just staring at the space, but I'm actually remembering all these things, and I want you to be there, and I want you to tell me how much you love me. So it could be viewed as a simple love song, but it's really, it's written with the concept of the effect dementia has and getting that marker down now.
Let's have a listen.
If you think I'm far away, I will want you to stay. I wanna hear you say.
that's the title track from the new album.
It is.
Roulette. And the next song we're going to play is actually about your grandfather.
Yeah.
Who, you know, just to explain, you know, back in 1939, there was a mining disaster here in Fife.
Yeah.
And your grandfather was part of that.
He was, yeah. Alexander Banks. It was a Valleyfield disaster in October 1939. And he was one of 35 men who was killed in that disaster. He was the only one, I understand, who was brought out alive. He died 5 days later in hospital from the extensive burns. So obviously, in 1939, I never knew my granddad, granddad at all. And the song 35 Men is about the impact of 35 men dying, and it's just 35 men, you know, because there was an inquiry into it, etc. But again, you know, nothing like there would be in the situation if that happened today.
Well, it must have been just a few weeks after the Second World War had broken
out. Yes, it was. And I mentioned, I think in one of the verses, I think it's verse one, brothers in arms in the lyrics. And at that point in time, there were brothers in arms because they were every bit as important to the war effort as the fighting people were.
Were you one of the first men then in your family not to go down the pit?
My elder brother, immediately elder brother, he never. My brother older than that, he did. Cousins did. Uncles. Yeah. Very, very few of the Banks family have not seen the inside of a pit.
And I can imagine that, you know, coming from that background, that would lead you into politics, but not necessarily into music.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, what was the inspiration behind getting into music? And when did you get your first guitar, for example?
My brother had a guitar before me, and he learned to play the guitar before me. I self-taught myself on a guitar that he had. I played my first gig, if you like, when I was probably 14 in Socky Parish Church Hall, me and my older brother Stuart. I remember it to this day. So I probably got my first guitar when I was 11 or 12, something like that.
Yeah. So it led you away from a life that could have ended in disaster, mm-hmm. as it had done for your grandfather,
mm-hmm.
and as indeed it did for your dad too, yeah. because yeah. he died of a mining-related illness,
yeah.
didn't he?
He did, yeah. Both my mum and dad died in the 50s, and when they were in the 50s,
yeah.
And my dad never worked from I was five because of his mining related illnesses, and he died when I was 12.
Well, let's dedicate that song about the disaster in Fife all those years ago,
yeah.
to all the Banks men and
thank
Banks
you.
Family. "35 Men". When did you actually write that song?
Oh, 2023.
So it's a brand new song.
Yeah,
what,
it's brand new.
What was it about this particular time then that made you want to go back to that?
Well, in the 90s, I went to Stirling University and did a part-time degree course. So you could do it part-time. Did it nights and weekends, etc. It's the same quality of degree as anybody who went and studied permanently. They don't offer it now, unfortunately. So I did a degree in history and politics. I got an honours degree in history and politics. And I have mulled over in recent years going back to do a PhD. And in speaking with the university, one of the things that I was considering doing if I did go back was doing the PhD on the Valleyfield disaster and the response to it, etc. So if you like, those discussions, which haven't come to fruition yet, I'm not doing a PhD at this point in time, but those discussions that I had with Dr. Jim Smith at Stirling University led that to be ever more present in my mind. Mm. And, you know, just you look for, I look for things that have impacted my life to write songs about. You know, have I written the straightforward love song that doesn't mean anything to anything? Yes, yeah, I have. All people who call themselves songwriters have. But I much prefer to write a song about a topic or a subject or a person that means something to me. So obviously, coming from a mining heritage, the Valleyfield, and living in this area, the Valleyfield disaster has never been far away from my thoughts. So,
well, let's go from a song about your grandfather to a song about your grandson.
Yeah.
So we're going to play next Mirror Never Lies. Okay. And this is about wee Lucas, isn't it?
It is.
Okay, let's hear it. So Mirror Never Lies, another track from the new album. So this is about Lucas. Tell me how this came about.
Well, you hope you have a relationship with your children and your grandchildren in such a way that that it's strong and it's everlasting and it doesn't matter the ups and downs, etc. But you wonder, the further removed you get from your children and then down to your grandchildren, there's so many other influences on their life. If you're going to have that kind of relationship, you know, if it's really going to be strong and how long it's going to take to be strong. It didn't take very long for the relationship between Lucas and I to be strong. I remember his dad saying to his mum when he was about 18 months old, "My God, he loves your dad, doesn't he?" I don't know if that was a compliment or not. So it was really about that strong relationship that we have and trying to map out and say to him, you know, look ahead, you've got lots of things ahead of you, but, you know, keep this relationship thought with you as you go through your life. And it is, I've got a great strong relationship with me, you know, both my kids and all my grandkids. But with Lucas being the oldest one, you know, that was the first one that formed that relationship. So it went from having no relationships with grandchildren to having this very, very strong one.
Is there a similarity in the relationship that you have with your grandson that you had with your dad, who died when you were only in your teens?
No, I don't remember a relationship with my dad. My dad was ill from when I was five. Never worked from when I was 5 year old, died when I was 12. And all I remember is my dad sitting in a chair being ill, quite frankly.
You don't see anything of your dad in your grandchildren?
No. No, I don't really, no. What I see and what everybody else sees and two of my grandchildren, Lucas and the youngest one, Arlo, is me. So if there's my dad and me, and probably there is in my temperament, certainly my dad's in my temperament, Lucas's temperament is fairly similar to mine. So I suppose I'm backtracking on what I said, but so from a temperamental point of view, yeah, we probably are like my dad.
Yeah. We've mentioned, you know, that family is a big influence on your songwriting, and not least your son Dominic.
Yeah, Dominic's been, through his life, has been a never-ending source of inspiration for a lot of things, including songs. The first album has got lots of songs. It never made the news album. It's got lots of songs on it that were motivated, instigated, or got lines or verses that are particularly relevant to Dominic, who was quite a character. Well, he is still quite a character. Anybody who knows him, I go around Clackmannshire and people come up to me and go, "How's Donna getting on?" And go, he's fine. So he was a character when he was a little boy, and some of the phrases he used to come out with, again, I used to take the phrases and either work a song around them or build them into song. There was a song I wrote, it's on the first album, it's called First You Will, and it's just about him being an awkward little so-and-so, first you'll do it, then you won't, first you like me, then you don't like me, then you're dead there, and people will think it's the whole concept of what I said about, people taking other things from songs. If you don't know that, it just presents itself as a true love song. Yeah. But it, male to female, or male to male, or female to female kind of love song. But it's really dad to son. That's what that's about. But that's what I mean about, they have multiple meanings. The songs, and I suppose many songs do. It's just when you dig deep a little bit, you can piece together, what's been driving the writer at the time.
Well, there's such a strong family bond that you obviously have with a lot of these songs. Mm-hmm. So we're going to listen now to one about your brother, or rather, you can explain how the lyrics came about, mm-hmm. and how you managed to achieve this song that we're going to listen to now. It's called Moderate Man.
Yeah.
Moderate Man, and we'll play that for Gary. I'm sure he's listening somewhere to us.
Hopefully.
But you actually, you started off together, didn't you, playing music?
No, I started off with my other brother, Stuart. Oh,
yeah. Sorry, yes, yeah, that was with Stuart.
That was with Stuart, yeah. We started off
so together. So it was a complete surprise that Gary was a secret poet?
Yeah, absolutely.
It's funny how you find things out about people at their funeral that you never realise, isn't it?
Yeah. But there's poetry in our family, because I had an uncle, Uncle Walter, Walter Banks. He died in the war. He was taken prisoner by the Japanese and put on a ship. And the Japanese put their own soldiers on the hospital ship, and they put the prisoners onto the troop ship. And the Americans came along and bombed the troop ship and killed everybody. But before he went to war, Uncle Walter had a small poetry book published. So he was, there is poetry and lyrics writing, etc., in the family, dating back to my dad's brother.
Yeah. I take it, though, that along with writing songs, there was a quite a long break in that during your life. Where you turned to writing speeches rather than writing songs.
Yeah.
How did that come about, that you got into politics? I know you mentioned that you studied history and politics at uni. And did that inspire you then to stand as an MP?
No, I've always been sort of politically active in my brain, even before I went to university and did history and politics, etc. And I suppose it did no harm in opening your eyes a little bit more when you start to study things in depth. And it's not something that everybody can have the benefit of doing. But I joined the Labour Party in about 1995 and 1996, sort of at the time I was doing this degree. It seemed I was very good at being able to run election campaigns, so that's how I found my niche, if you like, within the Labour Party, was running election campaigns. So I ran election campaigns for Richard Simpson, who was the MSP, who was elected in my area in 1999 for the Scottish Parliament, the very first elections. I ran European elections. in our area. I ran elections for Martin O'Neill, Lord O'Neill, who sadly died a couple of years ago, for Westminster. And then when Martin stood down, there was a general perception that I would just automatically put my name forward to stand to be the MP. It's not quite as simple as that. It doesn't work that way. But I gave it some long thought, bearing in mind I had a business that I was running at that point in time. And I decided I would do that. I would put my name forward. And I always remember the final selection meeting was in December 2004. Yeah. And I remember sitting with Linda at the kitchen table before we went to the final selection meeting. And this wasn't being conceited or big-headed, but I knew I was going to win this election. I knew I was going to win it. And I said, now's the point. If we're not going to go through with this, tonight's the point where I've got to turn around and go, no. Okay? Mm-hmm. So that was as close as that. I mean, you know, 7:30 meeting, and at 7 o'clock you're sitting around the kitchen table deciding that you're going to go through with this, on the presumption that my thoughts and beliefs came true. So we decided I would, went for it, and I won the selection process handsomely. Now, that doesn't mean that you're going to be an MP. It means you've just been selected to be the political candidate for your party. And it was a very difficult seat that I had to fight, Oakland, South Perthshire. Naturally, an SNP or a Tory seat. Now, our current day is more naturally an SNP seat. So it was quite a shock to a lot of people, including the SNP, when I actually won the seat by a small majority in 2005. I defended it in 2010 with a bigger majority, and then the tidal wave came along in 2015 that blew all but one Labour MP, Ian Murray, out of Scotland.
Well, you mentioned your wife, Linda, mm-hmm. During that time. As very important to get her support, mm-hmm. To back you on that, because of course you just as much time on the road as an MP as you have as a musician.
Yeah.
So let's play a song for her. This is Rose of Jericho. So I will be what you dedicated to your wife, Linda, Rose of Jericho. When did you write that?
2021.
So fairly recently.
Fairly recently, yeah.
Yeah, but she's been an inspiration for you for many years.
Yeah, I've written, I said it earlier, you know, you can write this non-entity of a non-meaning love song to anybody if you like. And yes, I've done that. But if I choose to write a love song and I want it to be meaningful, I would focus on Linda because of the strong relationship that we have.
But how did you meet?
We met in a disco in Coles Norton Town Hall, Village Hall, Coles Norton Village Hall, when she was 14. And I was 16. Yeah.
Love at first sight?
Love at first sight. We have been together ever since.
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So, difficult being an MP, of course, with, as I say, life on the road. And what advice would you give to anyone that's in that particular situation where they're away from home a lot, mm-hmm. and they need the support of their partner?
Yeah, because we all make mistakes in these situations, because they're all new. They're all new to us. I mean, being an MP was new to me. Being away from home for 4 or 5 days a week was new to me. Mm-hmm. I've always worked hard and long hours. That didn't matter, but every night I always went home. Didn't matter if it was 10 o'clock at night, I always went home. Mm. Whereas this was a situation where 4 days a week, or sometimes 5 days a week, you're in London and away from home. And that puts a strain on the strongest relationships, to be truthful. And, as an MP, the way I did my job, there was, I came home on the Thursday night or the Friday, and it wasn't a case of that was it. You know, I was at home, you know, speaking to Linda and making sure everything was all right in the family. It wasn't. I was doing my constituency work. So again, over the weekend, there was very, very little time for us as a unit. And that is difficult. You have to have an extremely strong relationship to get through that. So I think the advice I would give, as you asked me to offer a piece of advice, the advice I would give in a situation like that is don't forget what you've got and don't take it all for granted.
Yeah. Well, if Linda was your support and an influence on you from that point of view, what about the musicians that have influenced you over the years?
Yeah. How long do you want to go back?
Well, just give us the top two or three.
The Beatles, of course. You know, many, many people in the world have been influenced by the Beatles, particularly John Lennon. The Hollies, going back into the 60s. And of course, the things that, like, Graham Nash went to Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, and that interested me, how that change was able to be made from a Manchester-based English pop group into this country supergroup, Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young. So that interested me. David Bowie has always been a strong influence to me, as are bands like Squeeze and particularly Crowded House. And I think Neil Finn's songwriting from Crowded House is just outrageously good.
Right.
It's far too good.
Let's have another listen to a song from Roulette. And this one's called Paint Your Face. What you do, what you do, what you do. Gordon Banks there with Paint Your Face. Tell us a bit about that song, because again, that's got a very personal influence, hasn't it?
It has. It was written in 1987 and my daughter was three.
And it's Victoria.
About Victoria, yeah. It's about my daughter, Victoria. And again, you know, can you remember these things all the way back, or do you remembering them, right? But I can remember in my brain, sitting in the living room writing this song. And the kids were, I was going to say the kids were both there. Dominic wasn't there because Dominic wasn't born. but Vicky was there. And Linda was going to night classes at this point in time in the college doing, I can't remember what it was. She was, you know, something to keep her brain active, did it. and wanted to write this song that encapsulated the two of them. So the Paint Your Face comes from, you know, putting makeup on, basically, right? And I always remember there's a bit in the song that goes, like your mom, be number one to me. And when I was singing it or working out the structure of the song and singing it, and Vicky was in the room, and one of the times I sang, like your mum. And she goes, oh, like a mummy. You know? And I thought, oh, my goodness. Oh. Yeah. You know, it was heart-wrenching. You know, she liked her mum. She told me that as a bounce back to the vocals in the song. Yeah. So it's a song about the two of them. It's to Victoria, if you like. Basically saying, you know, you'll not go far wrong if you like your mum. And I sang it to her at a wedding as part of my Father of the Bride speech.
Oh, great. Well, you know, we've spoken about all sorts of different influences, and particularly with the family and the history of your family. But what about some of the people that you've actually worked with, some of the other musicians that you've worked with over the years, including the Zephyrs, for example, but starting off with your brother, Stuart, and working forward, there've been many that you've worked with over the years.
Yeah.
Davey Patterson, for example, who's sadly no longer with us. Mm-hmm. You know, who is still influencing you today?
The musicians that I'm working with just now are really influencing me. I mean, the Zephyrs have played on Paint Your Face, the track that we've talked about, because I've recorded that song before, but I wanted a more country approach to the song. Mm. And I never felt that in previous recordings I'd done the song justice, to be truthful. The production that the Zephyrs have, or the quality and the approach that the Zephyrs have brought to that song is excellent. So they've done a great job, and I'm very proud and happy that they were prepared to play a part in that track. Been working quite closely with guys from Empire Music Productions. So Carl Williams is a drummer, world champion drummer. Peter Little and Gary Campbell, who's a guitarist. And they are working closely with me on a number of tracks, and they can help with a lot of the arrangements as well, because you need other people's take on things. It's good to get other people's feedback and say, you know, have you thought about this song as X, or have you thought about that little bit there being that way instead of that way? So Carl, Peter and Gary at Empire are a great source of support to me. And hopefully, once this album's finished, there'll be some live dates, and the guys from Empire and others, maybe like Andy Reynolds, who I think is involved with Empire, who plays bass with Nick Kershaw, etc. I think we'll have a couple of live dates, hopefully. Okay. John Brennan, who also plays with the Zephyrs, has played on with the Paint Your Face part of the album, but John's already also done some lap steel guitar work on other tracks, and he's just excellent. Just really, 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 you feel what he's playing, you know.
Yeah.
You feel what he's playing. So I mentioned that we have Carl, world champion drummer, playing on a lot of the tracks, Carl from Empire Music Productions. But I also have a world champion accordion player on one of the tracks, Kaya from the Czech Republic. But a lot of this has been facilitated and glued together and brought together, you know, by Michael Brennan at Substation. Little did I know what I was doing when I rocked up to Substation one night, to having done some research and wanting to go back and with the studio and start recording stuff, made an appointment to come down and speak to Michael. Little did I know the quality that I was speaking to across the table when we were having the chats. The guy's a magician. He's great to work with, imaginative, always got a spark about something, makes you think about what you're doing. Mm. And it's a very personal thing. Well, it is to me, it's a very personal thing. As we've talked about, a lot of the songs are personal, personal experiences. And I've, you know, from when I was writing songs and I started at 16, I've started sensibly at 16 writing songs. A lot of them have been about personal things in my life. And you need to be comfortable with the surroundings that you're working and the people that you're working with, so that when you maybe explain what a song is about, that you've got a relationship and an understanding and they get that. So Michael is just wonderful, and the quality of production on the album is, to me, it's out of this world. It's excellent. He's a magician.
Right. Well, let's have another song now. This one's called Sleep.
Sleep. Go to sleep. But don't forget to pray. Pray for some sunshine. Thank you.
So again, another track from Roulette by Gordon Banks, and that one's called Sleep, and I believe that one is dedicated to another grandson, is it?
It is. It's to Oliver. That's the middle one. He's six now. And it really came to me one night, you know, when we spent a lot of time with them and I was through and I was trying to set them down to go to sleep one night. And he usually goes to sleep in about 30 seconds, quite frankly. That's like me. I go to sleep as soon as my head hits a pillow. But he wouldn't go to sleep this night, so we decided that I would encourage him to play the sleeping game to see who could go to sleep fastest. Right. And there was a prize for whoever went to sleep the fastest. So within 30 seconds, he was asleep. And my mission as papa, as settling middle grandchild and getting him to go to sleep was accomplished by... But the sleeping game was something that Linda's dad used to play with her for the same reason, trying to get his daughter to go to sleep. So it's just basically about, you know, going to sleep and dreaming and, you know, how important dreams are. You can't buy dreams and they're yours. But yeah, again, it was literally, I mean, if I hadn't have been challenged with the episode of putting Oliver to bed that night, you know, sleep might never have come about, and life's like that.
Well, I had a very disturbing dream last night. I was at Buckingham Palace, the Queen was there, Boris Johnson was there, everyone was in black tie, and I was walking about with just a towel wrapped around my waist. So I don't know what that means, but I'm sure it's something very strange.
Wasn't the order of the bath, was it?
Well, it could have been. It could have been. The thing that intrigues me, Gordon, having, you know, read about you and having met you a few times before and during this interview, is, you know, your life has had a lot of variety. You know, when you, given your, you know, where you grew up and moving to Scotland mm-hmm. when you were in your teens, and your time at uni and studying history and politics, getting into politics, being an MP, and at the same time running various businesses as well over the years, but something has drawn you back to music time and time again. Mm-hmm. There have been huge gaps there while you were in politics. Yeah. It wasn't perhaps appropriate for you to become the singing MP. But what is it that's brought you back so often, and why now to release this album?
I suppose it's just your life influences banging up and queuing up on you, right? And you could shrug your shoulders and... you know, and move on. Whereas I have the ability to play the guitar. I think I have the ability to write a song. So the way I see it is that these life influences that have formed me into what I am become ever more important. And maybe it's a passage of time. Maybe, you know, as life goes on, you've got less time ahead of you and more time behind you. That's a natural thing as we all get older.
Well, you had various opportunities at times in the past. You know, when you had management, for example, you had an agent. You had you had the opportunity to go professional at various times in the past. And didn't. Was that a regret that you didn't take the chance?
Well, you always wonder what might have happened.
Yeah.
You know, what might have happened. You know, when I was 18, I started to work in the construction industry when I was 18, but up to that point, you know, when I was 18, I was earning £200 a week playing in bands and et cetera. That was a lot of money in those days, you know. Mm. That was in 1973. That's a lot of money. Yeah. So I think it's not so much regret as just wonderment. You know, you wonder what... Take you back to the conversation that we had earlier in the interview, you know about your mum and dad sucking up and getting on with life. You know, it's a little bit of that. Well, I didn't do that. Suck it up, get on with it, move on. But I still think I have, from a musical point of view, I still think I have something to see, and a quality product, and I want that to be out there.
So, what is your ambition with this? What do you hope for?
Well, when I was an MP, I remember I got a phone call. Sorry, no, it wasn't a phone call. It was an email. I got an email from a man, and I wish I probably have the email somewhere, right? But goodness knows where it will be. But the email said, "Are you the same Gordon Banks who wrote it never made the news?" And I went, so I responded to the email and said, "Yeah, I am." Right. So the guy emails me back, says there was a competition in the Alloa Advertiser back in Blab, whenever it was, to win 10 copies of your album, or, you know, one copy for 10 each. And I was one of the people who won a copy of the Never Made the News album. It's the best album I've ever had in all my life, is what the man from who lived in Inverness by this point in time, the man from Inverness told me. And that stunned me. That was, you know, high praise indeed, that somebody felt that strongly about something that I'd created. So in essence, what I'm looking for is recognition that the songs have got a quality, they've got a meaning to many people's lives today. You know, we've talked about roulette and its relationship to what the source of what the song was written about, dementia. You know, we've talked about grandchildren. You know, many of us who are lucky enough have got grandchildren. You know, we've talked about love songs like roulette. We've talked about tragedy like 35 Men. And people have varying degrees of tragedy in their life. You know, 35 Men could be translated into anything. And we've talked about, you know, other things which impact on people's lives. I have just taken those things that have impacted my life, created, you know, for this album, 12 songs, which we've talked about a number of them today. Created 12 songs, which I think have got a great meaning to me, right, as the creator of them. But I don't think they're that insular that they only mean something to me. I think there's meaning and recognition there for a wider audience. And I just would like some acceptance that the songs mean something to other people as well as meaning to me.
Let me ask you a final question then. Would you rather that one of your songs became a hit for you, or would you rather that one of those songs became a hit for a major artist?
Okay. Well, I think most people would turn around and say, I would rather one of those songs became a hit for the person who wrote me, right, in that situation, if it was a clear choice. Right, but I don't think in those kind of parameters. I think the likelihood of, you know, roulette being number one in the album charts is unlikely. But I think there are a good cross section of songs which would have a wider appeal to other artists other than me. To be truthful, and if that opportunity came up, you know, I would embrace that.
So if it was Graham Nash on the phone saying, "I really like this song, I'd like to record it.
I really like Roulette, Gordon, let me record it. Let me have a think, give him a phony back." Yeah, you know, that would be a great accolade, because, you know, it's recognition that what you've created means something to someone else. And, you know, I always turn around, Jay, and I'll turn around and say, I could lock four people in four rooms, give them three chords, you know, D, G, and A, give them a topic, go and write a song in those three chords about this topic, right? And we'll come up with four different songs. They'll all be different. None of them will be the same, right? Mm. So what you create is very much a personal creation. And yes, it's got influences, you know, one of the reasons why the songs would all be different is, you know, you might be influenced by the Rolling Stones, I might be influenced by David Bowie, somebody else might be influenced by Crowded House, you know, and those influences will filter through into the songs, but we'll, you would come out with four different songs. So I like the fact that that the very unique songs are very unique creations. I mean, one of the tracks on the album is called Way of Life. And it's literally, it's about shoes. That's what it is. I decided one night to write a song about shoes, right? no direct influence to my life. I just took a random subject and wrote a song about shoes. And that's a really powerful song.
Yeah. Well, Gordon Banks, thanks very much. It's Thank been you. A pleasure to sit and chat with you. And we wish you the best of luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.